things we saw last time. And also, let me make a comment about something that we saw in the very first lectures. Because today we are not only going to continue what we did last time, but we are going to come back to some of the ideas that we saw in the beginning. So it's good to also review a little bit some of the things we did in the very beginning. So let's start. So we said that we were going to study self-avoiding walks. So these are walks that, as this one, they don't self-intersect. So as I said, we can think of this as polymers. So we have some kind of polymer, and we start growing the polymer, and it grows randomly. And it will grow a lot if the number of steps is very big, right? So if we set 1,000,000 steps, it will be 1,000,000 to some power nu, the average size of this polymer. And we expect this number to be somewhere between 0.5 and 1, because if it was totally random without a constraint that they cannot touch, it would be 0.5. If it was ballistic, it would be 1. And because they cannot touch, we expect it to be a little bit bigger than just a random walk, but not as big as ballistic, so something in the middle. Then we introduced, so that's one critical exponent. We introduced another nice quantity, which is this mu, which is a way of estimating how many self-avoiding walks there are with n steps. And we said it's more or less mu to the n. Okay? Now, I said it, but let me stress it in an equation, that more precisely, at large n, it's more like mu to the n times some prefactor, right? Some constant, and maybe some power even, like n to some gamma, right? But when I write something like this, it's very important that this is the dominant term, right? This is just some, decorates this leading exponential behavior. Is this clear to everyone? For example, if I define the logarithm of the number of configurations divided by n and take n to infinity, this is mu. It doesn't matter if there is such term here. When I put it inside the log, this term would go to zero, right? So this really mu is defined as really this quantity. Doesn't matter if there is a prefactor or not, but typically there is. Then, for example, this gamma would be another critical exponent, if there was. The one that could be interesting in computing. Now, what do we know about this mu? This mu, we know that it's some number between d and 2d minus 1. Why? Because we know that there are more paths than d to the n, because d to the n are paths that just go in the positive direction in any of the dimensions. So, of course, they don't self-intersect. And there are less than 2d minus 1, because there are less than 2d minus 1 to the n paths, because the paths with 2d minus 1 are those where at each step I don't go back. That's a necessary condition, but it's not sufficient to have a self-avoiding walk. For example, if I'm here, I did this. Now, in this class of paths, I could just turn right, but in a true self-avoiding walk, not really, because then I would hit the starting point, right? So it's necessary, I cannot go back, but it's not sufficient. Just not going back doesn't mean it will not itself avoid. Therefore, it's something in this window. But we could do better, because we solved this other class of self-avoiding walks that are a little bit better than those on the left. We studied these flower walks that just go up, and then at the end there is a flower. And we said that the number of such walks is 1 plus square root of 2 to the n. How did we solve this? Well, we found it exactly because we wrote a recursion relation that says how many steps are there that end up vertically or horizontally. We then solved this problem because this problem is clearly a Markovian process where given n, I know n plus 1. So it's beautiful to use these transformatrix ideas that we used already a few times in these lectures, right? And you just multiply by a transformatrix each time you want to grow and to find v with one more step. And the largest eigenvalue of t is 1 plus square root of 2, and that governs the large n behavior. And so, because 1 plus square root of 2 is like 2.4, maybe 2.41, right? Mu in two dimensions, for example, it's a number between 2.6 and 3. Now, as we will see, this number, we should think of it as some kind, in the same way that mu is a critical exponent, this mu, whatever this mu is a kind of critical temperature. Okay, I will explain this in a second, but I want to emphasize that because it's some kind of critical temperature, this mu is not something universal. If it's a square lattice or a cubic lattice or a pentagonal lattice, it will be different. Okay? However, it has this meaning of a critical temperature. that I will explain in a second. Okay, before going there, let me mention something that will become relevant a bit later today by the end of the lecture, but I want to review it, which is we solved this Ising model, exactly, the 1D Ising model. And we solved it in many ways, but one way we can solve it is because we can do a normalization group exactly in the one-dimensionalizing model. Namely, we can go to the odd spins, say, or even spins, and integrate them out. We can explicitly do the sum of these spins. And you see, this guy couples to this, this couples to that. When I integrate out, I generate an effective interaction between these two spins that before were not talking to each other. So we start with one interacting with two, two with three, we get rid of two, now one interacts with three. Okay, that's logical, right? Because one was interacting through two, we get rid of two, now one and three interact directly. Right? There was a particle mediating this interaction. And we start with a coupling between spins J, we integrate out the even ones, and we get a coupling J prime that depends on J. Now, this J prime in terms of J is easier to write when I write it in terms of the hyperbolic tangent of J, then it is just V prime is just V squared. So we start with V, we get V prime. Right? And so we start with a number between 0 and 1, we get a smaller number. So each time we apply this, V becomes smaller. And we could, for example, use this nice relation to say that the correlation length at V, which is how many sides do I need to take to see some significant correlation, say. If before it was 100 sides, after I coarse grain it's 50, right? And therefore there is such relation that the typical length scale is twice the length after I coarse grain, because now there are half the number of sides. And this is a powerful relation because, for example, it will tell me right away that the correlation length behaves in this way with the temperature, with a coupling. Okay, so this is just a review of what we saw. Now, suppose we could try to do the same thing. We did not do it. So in the 2D Ising, we solved 2D Ising, right? So we have the solution. But we could have tried to do some kind of renormalization. For example, I have this ball, this ones here, and I could try to integrate these ones out, right? Then I get the other ones, these other ones, that I drew as this tilted lattice, right? That it's here. These are the ones that remain. And I could try to say now I have this new lattice, and now this guy talks to this one, to this spin, and there is a J prime here, right? For example, that would be the case because this spin couples to this, there is a J. This spin couples to this, there is a J. So when I integrate this spin out, I generate a connection between this spin and this spin, and that in this picture would be some kind of connection. Right? Do you agree? However, you see that this here, so let's make a few comments, that this is not exact. It's not exact because when we integrate, we would also generate new couplings because this spin also couples to this and this to this. So actually, in this new spin, it's not just nearest neighbors, but these diagonals, for example, there would also be a coupling J prime prime. In other words, if you remember, when we integrated the spin out in the triangular lattice or in that 1D Ising, we were lucky because there were few options. So after we integrate out, we had a star triangle relation, for example. And it was still just the usual couplings. But if you do the exercise of integrating a spin out, the final result depends on the four spins, right? And there are three options for the final result because the total spins can be, again, four, 2 and 0, the sum of the spins, and therefore it cannot just be A times E to the coupling, and there you generate more couplings. That's fine, that's what we see here in the picture. And so we have J prime, we have J prime prime, and now if I integrate out, I get more and more neighbors starting to talk to each other, right? And so in general, if I do this, I start generating more couplings, etc. And so things become messy, and in practice, we cannot solve the model like this. And that's fine, that's not how we solved it. We solved it in another way. And it's not possible, or at least it's not easy, or it's never done, that we solve the 2D Ising model exactly by doing some exact renormalization on the lattice. Okay? it just becomes more and more complicated. Now, of course, we could say that perhaps we could ignore this. We could ignore these other couplings or truncate to a few of them. Right? We could say, yeah, okay, I will allow neighbors, nearest neighbors, but then I compute what is the new coupling after one RG step. I generate new ones, which are not neighbors or nearest neighbors, they are next to nearest neighbors, and I drop those. Right? And then I do again, and I drop those. Then it's not an exact normalization group analysis, it's an approximation. Right? And then, okay, the answer is, we could try. We'll try and see if it is a good approximation. And how would we know if it's a good approximation? Well, many ways. For example, suppose you keep only nearest neighbors. You do your computation and you get the results. Then you keep the coupling for nearest neighbors and next to nearest neighbors. And you repeat and you get another result. Then you keep three couplings instead of two. And you see that the result starts not to change so much. Then you keep four couplings and the result is already the same many digits. Then you see, okay, it's working. Right? Otherwise, how would you do? No, you don't.
I think.
Otherwise, you don't know. So that's an idea. You would keep, say, one coupling, only the nearest neighbors, and work out what your predictions are. Keep two couplings and work it out. Keep three couplings and work it out. And if it's okay, it's probably okay. Right? If the result converges. In the 2Dizing, you can do better. You compare with the exact result and see if the result is close or not to the exact result. But in the 3Dizing, where there is no exact result, that's how you could do, for example. You could predict results, keeping nearest neighbors, next to nearest neighbors, next to next to nearest neighbors. And if things are converging, you trust that your canonization group is okay. And the expectation is that these details of the lattice, the fact that you get more and more and more nearest neighbors, at the end, that large distance should not be so important anyway, because of what we saw several times, that there are these details on the lattice that large distance are washed out. So it's perhaps a good idea to do this, to try to keep a few couples. Okay? But I want to emphasize this would be an approximation scheme. Okay? Is there any question here? Okay. If not, so this was a small parenthesis, or if you want, back to the past, recalling some things about Ising model. But now that we close this parenthesis, let's go back to explaining why this is a critical term. So I'm saying that lambda plus is a critical output temperature in quotation marks, but we will explain what it is. Okay. And so the idea is the following. Suppose instead of considering this model where I fix the number of steps, I will introduce some chemical potential, right? It could be some chemical potential, and I say that I consider the generating function Z of Z, which is the sum over how many paths there are, z to the n times the number of paths, mn, which is just hn plus vn. So you agree that here I'm summing over all configurations, right? And remember that we can think of this z. We are summing over configurations, and if I think of this z as e to the minus the energy density of my flower, right, times the length, so I think of this factor, z to the n is exponential of minus rho times n, where n is the length, then I'm saying that this would be the energy, it is just proportional to the length of my flower, and how many flowers there are, mn. So this will be like a partition function for this type of polymer-like structures. Right? So far, so good? Okay. So then, this is our partition function, if you want. This is a partition function for this flower in the presence of some chemical potential Z. So Z, now I'm calling it chemical potential in this sense, that it's the energy density per length of my flower. And this is this quantity Z, G. Now we could compute G exactly. How could we compute G? Well, we computed the Vs last time, and we could sum them and get G, right? But let's do it in a more clever way. Let me show you how to solve it in another way. That's more interesting. Which is to notice that if I know those recursion relations, I can just multiply them by z to the n and sum over n. It's like what we did already when we had the recursion relation for the random walks, right? So when we do it, right, so I multiply by z to the n that equation, so I get z to the n vn plus 1 equal to z to the n vn plus z to the n hn. And now I sum over n, and this quantity, the sum over n, let's call it v of z, which is the same thing, but I sum with v. This quantity, I call it h of z. And what do I get here when I sum over n? On the left-hand side. Sum over n here. Let's see. Let me help you. This is better now. So I sum over n, what do I get?
V of z.
1 over z times v of z. Minus one term, because the first term is not there, because we sum, say, from 1, for example, but then we start at v2, and the first step was vertical, so minus z. This is the first step. What do I get if I sum over, if I do the same thing for the second equation? For the second equation, on the right-hand side, we get 2v of z plus h of z. Do you agree? It's just the right-hand side. And on the left-hand side, what do I get? One over z times h of z, right? Now without subtracting anything, because the first term is zero anyway, so it doesn't matter. Times h of z. So you have a system, you have this equation, it just give you directly h of, they give you directly v and h, right? And so now we get v equal tac tac tac, h equal tac tac tac, and therefore g equal v plus h, that I'm going to write down. So the result we get is very simple. It's G Z is Z 1 plus Z divided by 1 minus 2Z minus Z squared. So this is our result for our partition function as a function of our chemical potential Z. Okay. Now, where do we see this should have the same information as this, right? I'm just trading, fixing the number of steps by putting a chemical potential, right? One is conjugate to the other, so it should have the same information. So suppose we solve this problem, right? And now I ask you, here is the solution, right? What? Suppose we did not solve it like this before. We are just starting this model and we just solved it, it's here. And now we ask, what is mu? where the definition of mu is that the number of steps of a given size n goes like mu to the n. And instead, I'm not working with fixed n, I'm working with fixed z, which I wrote here. And so I ask, what is this mu? How would you, what would we say? So the first thing we would observe is the following. So what happens when z is very small? When z is very small, this is zero, right? Z times r. So it starts very small, and that's logical, right? Because if z is very small, it means that we are putting a huge energy per length. So the paths that dominate are paths of length 1, or at most length 2, or at most length 3, right? So we get z plus z squared plus z cubed, and then you can truncate, and you can ignore the rest, because the flowers cannot grow so much, because it costs so much energy to grow. E to the minus energy times length of the flower suppresses long flowers. Right? What happens instead when z increases? So this quantity starts small. So this quantity starts small at z equals 0, because the flowers cannot grow a lot. This is a typical flower. If the density energy is very big, right, then they cannot grow. And what happens as I increase z now? What could happen? So this part, who cares? Just some parabola. But what about the denominator? Could explode, right? It could find a zero of this denominator, right? And so g, if you find the two zeros, you can see that z is actually a polynomial, equals to constant. So g is actually a constant plus another constant over z minus z1 plus another constant times z minus z2, right? If I put the same denominator, then I get polynomial of degree 2 over a polynomial of 2z, right? Now you can find the zeros of this equation, and the zeros, the condition, the zeros of the denominator, 1 minus 2z minus z squared equal to 0. And you find that the solutions, I compute 1 over z, I want to write 1 over z, the solution to this equation is that 1 over z is 1 plus minus square root of 2. And so what are we saying? We are saying that there is a critical z at 1, so there is a critical z. Right. Good. So let me. Yeah. So 1 over z, so the smallest 1 over z is equal to 1 over, it's equal to 1 plus, the largest 1 over z, in other words, the smallest z is equal to 1 over 1 plus square root of 2. And so that's the first singularity I reach when I start increasing z. And so when we start increasing z, we have our g of z, and it starts small, grows linearly, and then when we reach 1 over 1 plus square root of 2, it blows up. And so we would say that this value here is what we would call a critical chemical potential or critical temperature. Right? So this is a critical chemical potential. So what is happening? What's happening is that if the chemical potential is very small, the flowers are very small. Because then the energy suppresses long flowers. But if I start decreasing the energy density, bigger and bigger, the flowers start to be bigger and bigger, right? And at some point, if the chemical potential is so small, the flowers are becoming huge. And at some point, they would diverge. So what does it mean? There is a competition between the entropy and the energy, right? And so the chemical potential is tuning and saying, where is the equilibrium? What is the flower size that dominates, right? And if you put an energy density, say, that is negative, for example, of course, this doesn't make any sense. Because then I'm summing of configurations, and bigger flowers contribute more and more. So of course, this would be just not defined, right? So of course, I cannot define Z to be bigger than one, right? Immediately. So Z, it's only makes sense as soon as our partition function Z of Z was equal to a sum of Z to the n mn. This guy behaves as mu to the n. And therefore, this expression has radius of convergence, which is equal to 1 over mu. If Z is 1 over mu, is bigger than 1 over mu, this explodes. Right? Do you agree? And therefore, we see that this behaves like this at large n. And so this G behaves as 1 over 1 minus Z times mu plus regular as Z is approaching 1 over mu. Right? In other words, mu is 1 over some critical Z. So that's the statement we had made there. So that's what we wanted to establish. That mu, you can see it by looking at the first singularity, because the first singularity is what governs the large n behavior. Right? So the large n behavior is governed by chemical potentials that approach the critical chemical potential so that the paths are bigger and bigger. So studying n very large is equivalent, absolutely equivalent, to studying z very close to this critical z. So z, there is a direct translation between the two.
Sorry?
Yes.
Why the physical meaning of gz is the expectation value of n?
That was the definition, right? That's the first equation I wrote, right? G of Z is equal, this was the first equation I wrote defining G. It's a partition function, and that's. So we can even do, we can even ask now questions such as, to see this in more detail, right? Let's see this in more detail, and okay, let's convince ourselves of this. So let's see this once more. And for that, I want to consider the following. It's something actually that it's in the tutorial for this afternoon, but I will partially solve it here. I want to consider what's the average height of the flower after n steps. Let's do the following. What's the average height of the flower with the chemical potential Z? And let's ask, what's the average number of steps of the flower with chemical potential Z? So let's define this quantity. Let's call it just H bar. And this quantity, let's call it N bar. So let's compute these two quantities. Okay. So how would we go about computing these two quantities? I want to know what is the I want to know what's the typical height that I got to. So that means, how many vertical steps did I do? Right? It means counting vertical steps. And so, let's see, what's the simplest way of doing this? I'm thinking if I'm missing something basic, maybe there is a faster way than what I'm going to do now. Let me just think. So V, I want to count the number of vertical steps. I have V sum over V. Sorry, just give me a second. There are two ways of doing this. One is easy, but I'm checking if this is, if it's the best as well. Okay, well, let me do it the way I thought about before the lecture. Because now I'm thinking there is a faster way, but I'm afraid of starting to do it, and then I'm not seeing all the way to the end, so maybe it will not work. So let me do the way I prepared. So one way we can do is the following. We could just modify this problem and say that I want to keep track every time I go up. Every time I go up, I want to put some chemical potential, because then I keep track of how many times I went up. So here is a small modification we could do. So let's do a small modification. And let's go to this equation and say, each time I go up, I put a small factor, small v, to indicate I went up vertical. Right? Now, if I go at the power of v, if I see a power of v, that tells me that I went, if I see v to the 7, it means that I went up 7 times. Right? And this is a trivial modification. It's a bookkeeping parameter that counts each time I went up, now I have a factor V. And it doesn't change anything in this mathematical analysis. So I mean, I just go here, I multiply by small v, and therefore in this equation, I multiply by small v. And now I solve these equations again, and I just introduce the V in the game. Yes?
Isn't Vn already keeping track of that? The number of vertical steps that you took at...
If I just use this function v?
The vn that you had originally was...
The vn. Yeah, that's right. It was already, yeah. That's why I said that maybe there is a faster way. Because here I want to use this g. I don't want to use separately h or v. I want to use g. But now I want to say that now g becomes a g that depends not only on z, but also on this new bookkeeping parameter v. Like I have one chemical potential for any type of path and one special bookkeeping parameter when I go up. Okay? Another way is probably to use G and V, to use the two functions. Okay, you can do it like that, but probably it's better, yeah, but this also works. Okay, so now, With this definition, our G is equal, we just compute, solve those two equations, and, okay, beautiful, I did not write down, I can, it's easy. And it becomes the following expression. So the denominator now changes a bit, and it becomes 1 minus Z, V plus 1 minus V Z squared. And then the numerator becomes z, the first step is always z, the first step is always vertical, so there is a v, and then 2z plus v1 minus. Okay? And you can check that when v equal to 1, it goes to the previous expression. And now, what do we do? Now let me write an equation and you tell me if you agree. That h bar now, and n bar are the following. Let's do n bar first. N bar is nothing but the derivative with respect to z times z of logarithm of g with v equal to 1. And I will write this expression, then we see if we agree. Whereas h bar is v derivative with respect to v of logarithm of g with v equal to 1. Because we introduce v, but at the end we don't care about v. So you see that what this is doing is v d dv is whenever you see a power of v, right, you just multiply by that power, right? V to the 7, apply this operator, becomes 7 times v to the 7. So it's really putting right down the right number. Right? And when you take this derivative, you get the right thing divided by g. So that's exactly what an average is. Okay? Similarly, when I see z to the n, I take z, d, z, z. I just get a factor of n downstairs. That's exactly what I want if I want to compute the average of n. Right? So all I have to do is compute log of this expression, take these derivatives, and put v equal to 1. Okay? Okay, and the result is, I even have it here before putting v equal 1, I don't know why, but okay, I'll put v equal 1 directly. 1 minus z divided by 1 minus 2z minus z squared, and this one, 1 plus 2z minus z squared divided by 1 plus z, 1 minus z. 1 minus 2z minus z. And so this is complicated, right? This is not so simple. And for example, now that you have these two relations, you could immediately write what is h bar as a function of n bar. Right? Because you have h bar of z, n bar of z, so you solve both and you get h bar of n bar. But what, and this is, you can do it. I mean, you can solve it in Mathematica and you get like one or two page expression. It's a mess. But what is this mess when n bar is very large? Well, what does it mean when n bar is very large? When n bar is very large, I need to go to z close to the critical z so that this becomes very large. But then this also becomes very large. And how do they become very large? Well, they become very large in the same way. There is a denominator here. There is this denominator. So the ratio when z approaches the zero of this guy is finite. And so we see that h bar is proportional to n bar. And if you just expand close, so this happens, as we see very well here, as z is close to the critical z, which is this 1 over 1 plus square root of 2. So I just expand close to this value, both diverge in the same way, and therefore I find the result. I'm going to just write it down, you can check it. You get n bar over 2 minus some constant, 1 over square root of 2 plus dot dot dot. Okay, the fact that it's linear with n bar, you can see from the naked eye. The fact that it is 1 half makes sense, because about half of the steps go up and half go horizontally, so it's what we expect as well. But what we see then is that this h bar goes like n bar to the nu, where in this case nu is equal to 1. And this is what we said was going to happen. If you remember, we said that the average size of these flowers, because there is bias, it should grow linearly with n, like in the ballistic example. And so that's indeed what we see. The height is already growing linearly with n, right? And so this is expected because there is bias, right? Up is okay, down is not okay. And therefore, we have some kind of random walk with bias. So of course, that's exactly what we expect.
Can yes? you go over why, if n bar is much greater than 1, that implies that we are around the critical?
Because you see that n bar, take z to be, let's see first what is n bar when z is small. When z is small, well, you get here 0, 0, 0, 0, it's like 1. You do one step. Then you set it small, you continue around and get 2, 3, 4. And how could it become big? It's when you approach the pole. So you start with some n bar that starts at, as a function of z. It starts at 1, then goes up, 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 up. And it clearly blows up at the critical z, which is the first position of the first pole. That's what we had anticipated. That's what we see here very explicitly. This function indeed becomes n bar, becomes very large here when I am close to the critical path. So if I want to study very large n bar, I should zoom in. It's equivalent to studying chemical potential close to this. In particular, let me emphasize something. So here, what we got is that h bar close to the critical point is something divided by z minus z critical, n bar close to the critical point is something else divided by z minus z critical, and therefore combining both, this implies that h bar is proportional to n bar to the power 1, right? Just that. Just look at both expressions. They diverge in the same way, so their ratio is finite, and so one is proportional to the other, right? And studying large n is studying z close to the critical z. Now, the point is the following. What would happen if here I have computed this quantity, and I got a power nu? So here, we know in this example, we saw nu is 1. But if nu was not equal to 1, what would be the conclusion here? Instead of h bar goes like n. What would we say? H bar goes like? If it was nu instead of 1, what would be, how would I change the equation? I would write h bar goes like
n
to the nu. So if instead of h bar going linearly, we would get square root or 1/3 and so on, this is how it would show up. So studying the behavior as we approach the critical point, if it had come out that the power was not a trivial power, if it was a power, say, 1/3, we would conclude that h bar goes like n to the 1/3. So studying how is the behavior as I approach the critical point directly tells me about this critical exponent that we wanted to study. Right? So if this was the scenario, then this would follow. And it would be equivalent, studying large N or studying small chemical potential. Okay? So this, I'm emphasizing this because that's what we are going to do now. Let's now go to the self-avoiding walks. Let's study them with chemical potential, knowing that if there is a chemical potential where the walks tend to be very big, the behavior close to that critical chemical potential gives me access directly to this nu that we said should be somewhere between 1/2 and 1. Right? So that's what we are going to do now for the real deal. So before, that concludes this toy model, and now we go to the real walks. But before going to the real walks, let me make one more important comment related to these walks with bias, because I said a big mistake once. If you remember last Thursday, I told you about these random walks I was doing with my daughter, where at each step, we would do even or odd to decide if we turn left or we turn right, right? And then, as I told you, when we get the same number, both of us, we go straight. And I say, okay, we go there and so on, and then we get some square root of n, typical size, right? You agree? Well, but indeed, so last we were doing it again yesterday, and my daughter pointed out that if you get two numbers and they are the same, this is always even. So actually, that walk is biased. So it's not square root of n, it's n, right? So if at each step, be careful with this in your life. So if at each step you make even or odd, and when it's odd, you turn left, when it's even, you turn right, and when it's the same number, you go straight, this is not it's a biased walk. Because you removed only even numbers. So indeed, she pointed out that, look, 3 plus 3 is even. So it was a realization, and then I completed the logic, and I explained. This has deep implications indeed. So be careful, that's not a random walk, that's a biased walk. Okay.
So that's why I didn't return to PI in the end.
Good. So that was important. So. Let's now. Go to the random walk. So now the idea for what we want to do next is introduce a partition function for the self-avoiding walks. See how it behaves as 1 over C studied close to some Z critical. And from there, learn about our critical exponent nu. But the idea is, how are we going to study this? Because this is going to be a hard object to study, and it's not like we are going to be able to compute it analytically, because this is a much harder problem than this trivial problem that we just solved by some Markov chain. So that's where the second step comes about, which is to study this, we use RG. Okay? But we are not going to do RG exactly. We are going to do an approximate RG in that spirit above. Right? Then we'll try to do better by thinking of a continuum formulation directly. Continuum self-avoiding walks. Instead of having a lattice, we really think of what would be a description directly in the continuum of walks like this that don't self-intersect. Right? So that's the plan for the afternoon, and the first 2 points, or the first point and half of the second point, I would like to do this morning. Okay? Okay, so let's start. So let's introduce some chemical potential, some Z, and let me define it like this. It's a bit, we can define Z of Z. I want to try to use Z. In my notes, I have a different letter, so it's possible that I will replace Z by K sometimes, but let's try to, please help me. Where this is the number for the self-avoiding walks. Let's also define a quantity, G of Z and also R, similar to our random walks. So like in our random walks, we say this is Z to the N times number of paths that go from the origin to some distance R. Of course, there is a relation between the two. Of course, G of Z is just the sum over R of G of Z and R. Okay. And now did I use all the blackboards already? Maybe there. Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, here probably not. Okay. Then we have, as before, that we could compute our correlation length, say square, as a function of chemical potential, right? Defining it as I sum over n, sum over r, I just compute expectation value of r square, z to the m, mn of r, divided by the same sum without r. Right? In other words, we are computing sum over r, r square, g of z and r, divided by g of k, g of z. Good. And now what do we expect? We expect that this sum, here, there will be the usual thing that these m's go like some mu to the n, with some maybe n to the gamma, like we said before. And so this entropy wants to put big parts. This chemical potential wants to put small parts, and there is a competition between the two, so that fixing z is equivalent to fixing the average size of the path, like what we saw before, right? So we have a competition that we have on the one hand. So here I'm plotting the summand. And on the one hand, we have an exponential decay from z to the n. On the other hand, we have an exponential growth from mu to the n, right? And therefore, there is an optimal position here, which is very peaked, because these are huge numbers, around some average n bar that depends on z. And so fixing z is like fixing n bar, like in our previous example. Okay. So we can find this position. For example, we can estimate this behavior by noticing that, so this, what we are saying is that it, the summand is approximately e to the n times log of mu times z plus gamma log n. Okay. We have some and the gamma is here. And therefore, if I look for the minimum, I look for the saddle point, I take derivative with respect to n, I get log mu z plus, this is irrelevant, this goes to zero. So I get that z is approximately equal to 1 over mu, that we knew already. This is our critical z. Sorry, what am I saying? Sorry. No, this is big, sorry. That number is big. I should not ignore this. Okay, that we knew already, this is true. But I don't want to ignore this. I want to really compute the position for n. I was silly. I'm doing something. So this is, forget about this. Okay. And then I compute and I see that n, let's just check, n here goes like gamma. Forget what I, so I do the saddle point, take derivative with respect to n, I get this equation, and I get that n is gamma divided by log of mu z, this, sorry for the confusion, And you see that this n at the saddle point blows up when I'm cross the critical temperature, which is what we said. It becomes 1 over 0, right? When mu times z is equal to 1. So this is approximately equal to some constant divided by z minus z critical, where z critical is 1 over mu. Do you agree? When z is close to 1 over mu, I expand, and this log becomes z minus z critical. Yes? Do you agree? If you want, I can do it slower, but just expand this function around z equal mu and call this, okay, it's just a statement, log of z over z critical, because that's what mu is approximately equal to, it's equal to log of 1 plus z over z critical minus 1, and this is approximately equal to z over z critical minus 1, which is z minus z critical divided by z critical. Right? And so this is true. Small algebra. So we see that n bar diverges as z minus z critical. Okay? That's what we had there as well, as before. N bar there was something over z minus z bar. Okay? So we see that we get this, and let's emphasize as in the flower, right? The flower example, that's what we also got. Not such a surprise, it's exactly the same thing.
There we wrote the mn as mu to the n, n to the gamma, right? That's what's going on in the g-partition function.
Yes, right? Yes.
So where does this n to the gamma come from?
It's whatever. It's any function that is regular at n that just grows a bit doesn't need to be exactly n to the gamma. I mean, in principle, the counting is not exactly exponential. It's exponential with some power law correction. But the point is that it's something smooth. So if it's something n... provided it just grows with, let's see, what do we need? Let me see how much I could relax this condition.
Because previously we didn't have this term, right? We just wrote mn equals mu to the n, and we handled that like.
Depends what you call previously. So. In trivial examples, it's true that often gamma is zero, and then you would have to be more careful about finding the position of the saddle point. Just putting gamma helps me reach that conclusion, that we did not need to have gamma, as you are saying, to reach before. So we could do it without gamma. If you put gamma, then this explanation becomes more straightforward, so I just put gamma there because I know that there is gamma actually in this box. So it just helps me go directly to the point of saying that n, the way n bar and z critical goes. So what we derive right now is that in the self-avoiding walks, when I have some chemical potential, n bar scales as z minus z critical. Okay? And the idea now is if now psi square, which is basically r bar square, scales as 1 over z minus z critical to the 2 nu, then nu is the critical exponent we want. It's the critical exponent we are after. That is that appears in the equation that r square scales like n to the 2 nu, right? So we just related finding this nu to finding this nu here. Okay? So right now, we translated this problem. So the goal is to find this nu here, because then I automatically solve this. So this arrow here was basically what we had before that translates working with n fixed to working with z fixed. And it's equivalent. Z close to Z critical is like n bar large. And so instead of studying large n, I can study critical Z close to the critical part. And if I study, and if I get an exponent, if the exponent is 1/2 here, like in the previous example, then it will be, sorry, here R nu. If it's 1, like in the previous example, because we computed without square. If it's 1, like in the previous example, then it will be ballistic. If it's 1/2, it will be random walk. But if we study this behavior and find some non-trivial number, that non-trivial number will tell me that self-avoiding walks have a non-trivial number. So that's what we are after. And you see that now, this is not so different from that example of the... So the idea is now to follow an analogy with the Ising model, where you see that if I could do renormalization, and I was summing over this V in the Ising model, right? We sum with some V to the N. So this V is like our Z. And from studying the renormalization, we could study the behavior of the correlation length as a function of V. So the idea is, let's try to use this idea and try to study the correlation length of these random walks as a function of chemical potential. And if we can reach something like this and predict the behavior of the correlation length, we are done. Immediately we predict the behavior of the critical exponent of the self-avoiding walks. Okay? So now the idea is turn to RG. Now the goal is to fix this exponent using RG. RG ideas. Okay.
Sorry. So how did we get the form for n bar over here? Because I assume that we didn't quite know the critical exponent.
I just took I just looked for the minimum, right? To find this position here, right? This is this position. And so the derivative gives me this, and this tells me that n bar is gamma divided by this. Maybe there is a mistake, yeah, there is a sign. Sign is probably gamma will change this constant, but the universal part doesn't care about gamma. Okay, so the punchline is that if we compute the correlation length as a function of chemical potential, and if we zoom in close to the chemical potential, that is the critical chemical potential, we read off the critical exponent of the self-avoiding walks, right? So that's the basic idea. So we reduce the problem of computing that exponent to the problem of computing this exponent in the language of chemical potential. And that's easier to do. Okay. So the idea now is to... And I will do it here. I don't have any blackboards there, right? There I used all. There's one? I think the one that is there we cannot use. Do you prefer that I erase or I continue there?
Erase.
Okay. So... So the idea is we start with our correlation function, g of z, which was a sum of z to the n mn. And we want to write this as sum z prime to the n mn after we do the following after. We renormalize by grouping a few steps and saying, for example, that something like this, I would group these steps and say that from the point of view of zooming out, that's just going to the right twice. Like in the usual random walk where we start coarse graining and we said we take n steps, that's the new step, n more steps, that's the new step, n more steps, that's the new step. Let's try to do the same thing here and coarse grain a few steps and join a few steps and say this is a new step. And so the idea is that after you do this, we will get a new step, but it will be weighted by some z prime rather than z. And what we are going to do is to coarse grain steps that happen in a 2x2 cell. And let me draw what I want to say. I want to say that a bunch of steps will, as I zoom out, be seen as just going up. So we are doing a coarse graining in the spirit of the sizing model of two steps at a time. So we say that if I just went up and then up, that's equivalent to just going up. This will be equal to just going up. But so will all steps that end up. All steps that went up, we just see that from far away, they look like they just went up. So another possibility would be, say, this. This, we also say, ends up being just equal to going up. And there are more you could draw in this. Like this one. So for example, I could also write this. And there is one more, which is this. So these steps, all these steps, microscopically, this is two steps. Microscopically, this is three steps. This one is three steps as well. And this one is one, two, three, four steps. They all start from this origin, and they end up leaving this going up, going up, going up, and going up. And so I would say that from my new perspective, this step going up, right? When I go up, I put some factor of k prime, sorry, z prime. But what is z prime? Z prime before was two steps or three steps or three steps or four steps, right? So z prime, the analog of that equation, that v prime is v square, which said that our effective coupling, right, this v prime equal v square has the meaning that this new step was actually two steps, v and v, and that led to v prime equal to v square, right? Here, the analog equation is that z prime, a factor of 1, is equal to the first term, which is 2 steps, z squared. The next two terms, which is 2z cubed. And then the last term, which is z to the 4. And we would say that after we cross grain, I go from z to z prime. And that would be our RG step. So this would be the analog of the V prime equal to V square for the 1D Ising. This would be the analog of that for the 1D Ising. But like for the 2D Ising, this is an approximation. It is not true that all paths that I can non-ambiguously coarse grain them. You can easily draw some examples that you would not know what to do. That if the path goes up, it's obvious. If the path ends up leaving here, it's obvious. But what do you do if the path goes back? Right? Now the path can in principle go back. But this was forbidden in the self-avoiding walk. right? So it looks like now, after I cross grain, I have the paths that go up, the paths that go right, that's okay, but I have a path that now could go back. The path that now goes back comes with a weight, z, z, z. It will be with a weight z cubed. So what would it mean? It would mean that now I would introduce a new coupling, z, of going back. It's a new coupling, z of going back. That would be like a coupling z prime prime. That would be, say, z cubed. That would be associated to this. And now it means that after I coarse grain, I have to sum over paths, and I put this coupling for usual steps, and this coupling whenever I go back. Okay, now I'm leaving the family of self-avoiding walks, right? Because now I'm putting these new couplings. And then I do RG once more, and maybe now I need a new type of step, a new coupling. So these are like new couplings. Exactly like this J prime prime and so on that we will generate in the 2D Ising-Mal. Okay? So what do we do? We say, oh, that's very unlikely to just go back, right? So we just ignore. Okay? And that's why here, although it's the analog, it's more the analog rather of the 2D. So this is an approximate approximation. We could do it better. We could coarse grain more steps, take into account more possibilities, and see if the result changes or not. Okay? So by the way, this part of the discussion, I'm taking it from the second reference that I gave you. And for example, some of the problems that he puts at the end of the book are precisely try to do this coarse graining a little bit better and see how much the results change or not change. Okay? So let's see. So let's use this, our approximation. So that's the box we are going to use to say that the walks with z are equivalent to the walks with z prime after we do one step. So we start with walks with z, we end up with walks with z prime. Right? Like we started Ising model with z and with v, and we went with Ising model with v prime. Yes?
Why is it right to say that it's unlikely for it to go back? Didn't we just say that? So this z function kind of limits the maximum height that we can have. So there is a good chance that it'll kind of go back as well. Even if
For example, here, there were many paths that go here and go up, right? Four paths. The one that starts here and goes down is just one path. So in that sense, it's very qualitative. Let's see what this approximation gives. We'll see it's not so bad. We'll see one result will be okay, one will be bad. Yeah, then we can blame that. Oh, it's bad because you forgot this. It's true. But it's often the case that we have no other ideas. What can we do? Right? Here, if you have a better idea on how to compute this critical exponent, we can try. But I assume we don't for now, so let's try this. This is the naive approximation scheme where I say that just going up, you see here, you can also think reversely. You can say, how many options were there to consider just going up from a microscopic point of view? And then you say it's this option, right? And you don't even ask, and what's the, how many ways there were of coming back? You just don't ask that question, right? By like throwing into the rug this subtlety of the couplings, right? If you just ask yourself, after IRG, how many ways could I have gone left or right? And you just draw these pictures, you write the equation, you even forget to ask how many ways were there of going back. And that's often what we do when we do RG. We ask how many ways are there of generating this term in the effective action, and we compute, and then we continue our approximation, and we forget that there are other terms that could be generated. So we do it all the time. It's an approximation. Okay, but now it's all about exploring the fun of this equation, like we did for V prime equal V squared. So now we explore this box, right? So like here, V prime equal V squared, we saw that if V is 1, it's okay, but otherwise V flows to 0, right? It was a very trivial equation, right? How could you do it here? You could say that this is V squared, this is 1. I need to be below 1, so I start with some value, I draw this value, I go here, I go here, I go here, I go here, I go here. You just apply V square several times and you end up going all the way to Z. Right? Now let's do the same here. Let's do the same there. So now, so that's our strategy. So we are in this step where we are now, we use the RG, and now we want to see the behavior of our correlation, of our correlation length close to this. So let's study first what is happening to Z. So if I plot now Z prime as function of Z, we just plot that function, and that function looks something like this. That's the plot of that function. And I can plot now, as before, so that this line is the line z prime equal to z. And this function intersects here at the value. I'm going to tell you what it is next. But we have here an interesting value, that's zero. Here another interesting value, and another one is here, infinity, on the right. Now this value, let me tell you already what it is. This value is the value z. Let me put Z critical, because you all know this is going to be a Z critical, which is 0.465571. It is just equating that equation, Z square, right? It's just, this is just the function Z square plus 2Z cube plus Z to the 4. You equate this to Z and you get that value.
Sorry.
Yes?
Why can't we consider the left way, like z square plus 4z cube plus 2z to the 4th, not just z squared 2z. They all come to the right. Can we consider the left way?
Yeah, good question. Why don't I go up here, right? Ah, no, this is this.
Yes.
That's this.
Yeah, why can we go left?
No, we can. I just studied. Let's study all microscopic configurations that lead to one vertical step.
Yes.
Now I could consider what are all the configurations that lead to one horizontal step, and I would find the same result. So there is isotropy, right? So.
But we can have one left step as well. Like not
left,
just one right step. There is a mirror symmetry.
You say there is one more step?
No, just three steps, but we can have one left and two horizontal, two vertical. Here in the board, on the board.
Ah, I'm assuming I'm starting from this point. This is the start.
Starting at the corner.
Yeah, I start here.
Okay.
Sorry, yeah, this is the starting point. Okay. So now let's see what happens. So what happens when I go and I RG many times? Now that's interesting, right? So I RG, I get Z prime prime, Z prime prime, what happens? Okay, let's suppose I start here. I start here, I go to this value, and I get a Z prime, right? That's the Z prime, that's this Z prime, right? This is this Z prime. So I apply again, I go here, right? This is Z prime prime. Right? And so if I go z prime prime, then here, and so on. So what happens if I start here? So if I start here, I go to zero. Okay, so we start drawing here. Let's draw just a line and say that if I start to the left of this z critical, I flow all the way to zero. So it means that if my chemical potential is smaller than the critical chemical potential, I flow to zero. What is the physics of zero, of z equals zero? What is the physics of very small z? Sorry? I think it's correct what you said?
It just shoots up.
Yeah, just very small paths, right? So this dominates, the chemical potential is huge. right? So when z is very small, that's the, this is the regime here of very small walls. Right, z is very small, so it suppresses any walk, so it is just maybe one step plus two steps plus order z cubed, right? You give z, z squared, and that's a boring regime. What happens if I start above critical z? If I start here at some value here, above the critical value. Well, I start here, right? So I go to this point. Then I iterate again, and you see that I go to infinity, right? Z prime grows and grows and grows and grows if I start above the critical point. So then, if I start above the critical point, I go all the way to infinity. Right? Now here, the chemical potential is very big. I want my paths to be as big as possible, so this infinity here would be this safe, this space-filling walks, where I have walks that fill all of space that we mentioned in the overview lecture. Okay. So this would be this space-filling walks. Walks that are very dense, that use all possible lattice. They just fill the lattice completely. This could be interesting. This is probably an interesting point, but we will not discuss it in this lecture. But that's also a moral, that's more interesting than very short walks. And then finally, we have this point here in the middle. If we start at z critical, what happens? Well, we stay at z critical. So this, right, we apply z, we go to z prime, and we stay there. So this is a fixed point. This is our fixed point, and it's our critical point. Where at this point, you do RG and you stay fixed, so you see some physics, and sorry, this is not good, this is self-intersecting. It's not. And you coarse grain, you zoom out, and you see something similar. Right? So same after zooming out. So that's when we have these huge paths that are very, very, very big. It doesn't matter what scale you consider. You zoom out, you zoom in, and you are at a fixed point. Yes?
So if we are in self-avoiding walls, how can we fill this space with walls?
Like that. I mean, they're not never touching, right? I drew like this, but I did not draw like this. This doesn't work. This would be dangerous. Now, doesn't work.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So those, no. Don't be trapped. Yeah, it's complicated. It's hard, right? So it's very hard to feel, making sure you are not going too close. So that's why I said it's probably interesting. More questions? Okay, so this is our interesting point. So what we want to do is we start with small walks and we grow until we reach this critical point. And so we want to be here, right? So we want to go here for z close to the critical point, a little bit less than the critical point, and see what happens to the correlation length, because then if we can study that, we learn about this exponent nu. Okay, so that's what we want to do. So that's where we want to be, right? So like in when you are in the mall, right? You are here. So we want to go there, right? Okay, since it's about this new, I think I will continue writing here, if you allow me. Is it okay? So let's see. So what did we learn? What would we say? We would say the following. So what's the relation between the correlation length with the coupling k and the correlation length with coupling k prime? What would you write?
Well,
what are the relation between the two? Can everyone see? What would you write here? Correlation length with length k. Suppose this is like 100 sites. How much is it? And then a coarse grain. So what should I put in this relation? When I coarse grain by this factor of 2 here. So this is exactly like in the Ising model, right? We had a correlation length. We said if it was like 200 sites and I divide by 2, now it's 100 sites. So same thing as here. So here, exactly the same 2 for exactly the same reason as in the Ising model, right? Because if it took 100 sites, now it takes 50 sites, right? So this is exactly for exactly the same reason. Okay, so we get this equation. But on the other hand, k prime, we know what k prime is because k prime we can study it as a function. Sorry, z and z prime, right? Please fix if I wrote k at some point, z holds. And therefore, this equation, let's see what this equation, how we fix this equation. So this equation, if nu scales like this, we conclude that we have 1 over z minus z critical to the nu equal to, let me write something, let me write b, where b is equal to 2. Because I want to write a formula that is very general, not just for our toy model where we scaled by 2. B is by how much we scaled, times 1 over z prime minus z critical to the power nu, because we are close to the critical point. Right? But this quantity here, z prime minus z critical, is equal to z minus z critical times derivative of z prime with respect to z at z critical, when we are close to z critical, right? So close to the critical z, this is just the slope, z minus z prime times the slope, right? So if I'm in that square that I said we are there, then that height is just that separation times the slope, right? Do you agree? And therefore, what happens is that this and this cancel, right? This z minus z critical to the nu cancels with z minus z critical to the nu, right? And we get, therefore, a beautiful equation, once we come, that says that 1 is equal to b divided by the derivative of z prime with respect to z at to the power nu at z equal to z critical. And therefore, that's the form. And therefore, nu is equal to log b divided by log of the derivative of z prime of respect to z at z equal z critical. Right? That's the equation that deserves a box. Because this equation would be true, right? It's very general. How we are here, we are applying it to this particular self-avoiding walks, but of course this logic would be very general. And so, and that's it. So this 2, this b is 2. This z prime as a function of z we have there, z prime as function of z. So we can compute this quantity here, right? We just compute zc was 0.46557. I just compute derivative of z prime with z around that value, and we get nu approximately equal to 0.715. Okay. Which is indeed very nicely between one half and one, as we said it had to be for the random walk, as we expected. And just for your comparison, the exact result is 3/4. It's not so bad. Right? This approximation is not so bad. It gives you like 10% error, 5% error even. Right? So it's not terrible. So that's good, actually. That's good. And if you were to coarse grain, not using 2 but 3, you do a more refined coarse graining, you can slowly improve this new and get more and more. You can get easily 7.30-something easily with just one more step. So you see that it's kind of approaching the right result. Okay? So this is very good. So that mu is good. What about mu? What is mu? Sorry, 1 second. Give me 1 second here. Something here is wrong. Something here is wrong. That Z critical is probably wrong. Can someone compute this Z critical in Mathematica? Just compute this equal to Z and solve for Z. I think this cannot be right. Sorry? It's correct?
I assume that is correct.
Ah, I'm silly. Okay, good. Of course it's correct. So Z critical is this. So what is mu? What do we get for mu? That was nu. And what is mu? What do we get for mu? Right, so that was nu. And remember what was 1 over Z critical? So mu, finally. So let's write there another box. But this box I like much more. This box has double line. The box for mu deserves only one line. Mu is 1 over Z critical, which is 2.1479. Now, this deserves only one box for two reasons. One, it's not universal. Like we said, mu is like a critical temperature. It's not universal. Whereas nu is a critical exponent, is universal. Just depends on the long distance distance. So nu is something universal. If you tell your experimentalist friend, plot the typical size as a function of the number of steps, plot log log, you will find a slope, beautiful, 0.71. Right? You make a prediction for an experimentalist, right? But what's the critical value, the critical chemical potential to start seeing big polymers? That depends on the material. Different molecules would have different chemical potentials, and this is not universal, so that's a little bit less interesting. That's one reason why this only deserves a single line. The other reason that this doesn't deserve to be highlighted much is that it's wrong. Obviously, because 2.1 is smaller than 2.4. Right? So this is smaller than 2.4, so we would be sad. So clearly it's not such a great approximation if it predicts a mu that is outside the range that we derived analytically that mu had to be. Okay? It's close. It wants to be close to 2.4. It's trying to go to 2.4, but it's smaller. So that's wrong, this mu. So once you see that mu is wrong, you also think that, okay, then mu might also be very wrong. It's not so wrong, as you see. But this is an approximation, and indeed, the only thing you could do, again, as I said, is try to improve it and see if mu would approach being inside that rectangle, that bound, and if nu would converge towards 0.75, which is the exact result, and indeed it would. Okay? So what we're going to do in the afternoon is ask, can we try to do a little bit better, and instead of doing this square lattice analysis and this discrete RG, can we go directly to the continuum and think directly of the continuum theory of polymers that don't self-intersect, directly in the continuum limit? Can we then solve these drawbacks of the RG and get a better critical exponent than this 0.715? And that's the main topic for the afternoon. The afternoon, the tutorial is at what time, and at what time is the lecture? I wanted to ask if it would be possible to swap the tutorial and the lecture. What do you think? Or is it impossible?
The tutorial has 2 and the lecture is 3:45.
Do you think it will be possible to have the lecture at 2? Is everyone going to the tutorial and to the lecture, or some people go to one and not the other? Does someone object swapping?
This is the room.
Yeah, as long as the room's available, then that's fine.
This room here.
Yeah.
Ah, okay.
It should just say outside.
Okay, if you could check, please. Thanks.
Pedro, why do you want to do it? Is there like a deep reason or just a convenience?
It will be a bit more convenient. Otherwise, we will finish at what time in the afternoon? 5:15. Okay. I would have to leave maybe at 5:10. We would have to finish 5 minutes earlier. It's also not the big deal. Who prefers to keep it as is?
Like keep it tutorial then lecture?
Tutorial then lecture. Who prefers to keep tutorial and then lecture? And who would prefer a lecture and then tutorial? Okay, no strong preference. I really don't. 5:15. It's enough. Okay, we can keep it as is then, not to create too much entropy. That's okay. Okay, let's keep it as is. Also, because the tutorial is very much related to these discrete walks and so on, so it might be a good time to first do the tutorial before going to the continuum.